It's 4 o'clock.
We'd like to welcome everybody here today to this episode of On Point, broadcasting live from downtown Minneapolis in the Macintosh Studios. And in Studio A, we have Mr. Ron Edwards. How are you doing today, sir?
Good afternoon, Mr. Allen, and I hope that you enjoyed the holidays. It's a cool but bright sunny day here in the Twin Cities. Minnesota Gophers, by the way, just on the note, still leading the Iowa Hawkeyes at TCF Stadium on the campus of the University of Minnesota. 2017, as we're looking at monitors here in Studio A. But we've got a lot on the menu, on the platter. Don, if you will, excuse the pun, platter, coming off of Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, yes.
Gouging themselves on turkey, ham, and duck, and whatever else. But let us have an appreciation for those that were able to enjoy, because and later on in the program we'll be dealing with a peculiar pattern of denying people here in North Minneapolis and in the city of Minneapolis food bags the day before Thanksgiving. Rather tragic story, if you will.
Yes.
A lot of people denied opportunity to enjoy Thanksgiving. But now what we want to do, start off with the international piece.
Yes.
You know, a lot of time being spent on the holidays. Of course, a lot of sporting events going on. Basketball, football, hockey, and et cetera. And, of course, the president was out of the country once again, traveling, trying to do some things. You know, if, a couple weeks ago he was in the in Southeast Asia, then he was in he was in Portugal, if you will. And a peculiar thing happened while the president was out of the country, something that is a no-no in the arena of political civility and et cetera. Senator Kyle of Arizona did something very peculiar. While the president was outside the United States meeting, and particularly meeting with Soviet leaders, or Russian leaders as they're now referred to, was undercut by the Republicans and Senator Kyle when they announced that they, the Republican caucus in the Senate, intended to gut the president's missile treaty. That he had consummated a couple months ago with the Russians. This is a very important international item, if you will. It is just absolutely a no-no as it pertains to protocol, as the folks like to tell us. You never do something like that, be it the opposition political party or anybody else, when a leader is outside the nation, and particularly when he is in the company of the people that he's negotiated the agreement with. And to say that the Congress does not intend to support the missile treaty, anti-missile treaty, was quite an undermining. And I noticed that the media, both liberal and conservative, have stayed away from chastising Senator Kyle. I expect there may be some discussion on Sunday talk shows tomorrow. But a lot of attention, you know, will be turned towards the international scene that we'll be talking about. And also, by the way, the Congress refused to extend unemployment benefits.
Yeah, that's going to be really rough for a lot of people.
It is going to be rough. No. Absolutely. Here's what we have, which may be the lead story. We'll certainly be watching this very closely on tomorrow. An American naval battle group is steaming into the Yellow Sea. And the Yellow Sea is a area, a body of water that is in between the Korean Peninsula, which is shared by both North and South Korea, and China. We had predicted on our television program to be aired tomorrow that the Chinese were not taking kindly to the presence of an American military presence within hundreds of miles of the shoreline and strategic military positions of the Chinese, you know, not even to talk in terms of what this is doing with respect to the North Koreans. If you take a look at your international map for our international listeners and domestic listeners, You're talking about an American presence, which includes the nuclear-powered aircraft carrier George Washington, as well as probably 11 or 12 or 13 support vessels. Those are destroyers, light cruisers, and et cetera. In awful close proximity, Mr. Allen, to China, to mainland China, and to strategic Chinese naval and military bases in that part of the world. The other thing that you need to watch out for, yesterday, the American commanding general in Korea, South Korea, was taking a look at the damage done in a artillery attack by the North Koreans a couple days ago. And North Koreans let it be known that they're not bashful about making their military presence known, and engaged in another artillery display, though they maintained it was a part of their military maneuvers. Now, I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, when you get two powers like this who have nuclear capabilities and the possibility of drawing in a third power that has nuclear capabilities, you're on very dangerous ground. I just hope that the president is being advised properly on this, if you will. The Chinese this morning issued a statement indicating their extreme concern now about the presence of an American military presence so close to their sovereign shores and their military facilities. So on tomorrow, as you quote-unquote watch football, which becomes meaningless if something breaks out over there, keep your eye on it, if you will. But international scene, very, very unstable at this hour, Mr. Allen. Okay.
Yeah, I've been following that pretty closely, and we'll just see what the turn of events are, and we don't hope China gets so upset that they want to call in their, what, $800 million or $1 billion debt, excuse me?
Billion. Close to a trillion dollar debt. The United States owes the Chinese a lot of money, and also the Chinese own and control a lot of property here in the United States. In other words, a lot of real estate.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't understand that or have figured that out. Even if you follow closely, like just real quick here, some of the stimulus money, a lot of that.
Yes, sir.
A lot of the stimulus money went directly to China. And so, people are just, you know, they're walking around with blinders on, not really understanding the true meaning of what that stimulus did, and how so much money can be put into the be put out by Washington D.C. and has really no effects in your cities and states. So
that's right. It has enhanced the Chinese economy, and how that works very quickly. I mean, so people don't get confused. Say, what are these guys talking about? A lot of the American banks, when they received the stimulus bailout, and a lot of these banks are part of the American Chamber of Commerce, who oppose vigorously and vehemently Barack Obama, et cetera, that a lot of the money was immediately paid to help retire the debt as it pertains to American financial institutions, AIG, such companies as that, were immediately paid to the Chinese to retire some of the debt and to get back some of the financial paper that is being held by, quote-unquote, the Chinese and their financial institutions. By the way, in China, everything is state-controlled, okay? So you're not really talking about any independent operators, all right? Everything is state-controlled. Beijing runs everything. But you put your finger on something that is not talked about, and that is how much of the American stimulus dollar approved by the Congress, signed off by President Barack Obama, went to help retire America's foreign debt.
Exactly. So we have a lot of things going on here nationally. Well, let's just boil it down locally with some things happening, and you have a little bit of information there that you'd like to start off with, I gather.
Well, I think we also have a caller. Why don't...
Yeah.
Let me do this very briefly, and then let's go to our caller, Ms. Dean. We have been following for the last 4 or 5 hours here at On Point, and specifically through Mr. Allen's IBNN, a very peculiar pattern of suppressing information about the death of a woman early this morning at Abbott Northwest Hospital. She was a victim of a sexual assault a month ago. Apparently complications, not to be confused with the outrage that took place in Powderhorn that is on the front page of the Minneapolis Star and Tribune this morning. But we'll be following that. But let's get our caller in. And by the way, Mr. Allen, if you would, just give the number very quickly.
Sure.
Call in.
Yes, to call in, use our toll-free number here at On Point. It's 1-877-572-4288. Again, that number is 1-877-572-4288. We welcome your comments, suggestions, and topics. Hello, caller. You're back live on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, you're here. Where are you? Your name again, ma'am?
My name is Lisa Dean.
And I'm
calling in to talk about the police being honest in the city of Minneapolis. And I wanted to say that I did work for the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights at one point. And I wanted to say the community, how I got there was because of my involvement in the community. I mean, we had, where I lived, we had some issues with the women that lived there that were being put out of their homes. And we were pretty much almost under martial law. And so we raised our voices, and we got the attention of the media and even the city officials. And so I think that if we wouldn't have said nothing, then the complex management would have been able to get away with that. I mean, they even had the police department on their team. So we spoke up, and we got attention, local and national attention. And then that's when a lot of the pretty much, you know, got awarded a position at the Civil Rights Department. But another thing I wanted to say about the police officers, that, I mean, I guess there is a problem with them making these false reports, but then at the same time, we as citizens, we almost plea a lot, so we never bring them to the court so that they could lie under oath. It's almost like they don't even get to that point. So we need to challenge them and bring them in front of our peers, in front of a judge, to make them plea. I mean, to
plea bargaining is what you're talking about, the issue of plea bargaining. You're absolutely correct. Go right ahead, Ms. Dean.
Yes.
And once we do that, once we challenge them, then we'll have a record of police officers, and then we can get together a citizens class action or whatever to hold them accountable. But then we have our role to play. I mean, because if we don't, then, I mean, the things that I was faced with, I was dealing with a complex which owned a lot of properties in North and South Minneapolis, and also the police department. So we have power structures that we have to go against. But then at the same time, we had power structures that were on our side too. So we as citizens, we got together, got the attention, and that needs to happen. It was like a 60s era. I mean, we had a lot of people that stood up. So we need to challenge ourselves, challenge the law enforcement, and then make them come to court in front of that judge and under oath, make them lie, just like they lied in under so-called under oath in that police report. We need to bring them before a judge. We cannot be taken if we know that they're guilty.
Well, Ms. Dean, I'd like to interject something right there. You work for the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. So, and we've been following that here on Point since day one, and even before that, years before that. You know, in the city of Minneapolis, we do not have a correct functioning Department of Civil Rights. You know, in cases like yours and other cases, you know, you guys went out, you did the grassroots thing. You protested, you got some local media out there, and you got things kind of straightened out, and then they gave you a job at the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. But you being down there, you see the number of people that come through there with complaints, and I know some of those investigators just don't want to be bothered with poor people, you know? And so with that said, we have to have some kind of a conduit or pipeline to actually address these things. Because if you know about, been following the Jason Anderson case, I mean, this was a police officer who gunned down a youth, Fong Lee, and said he had a gun, but there was no evidence of this gun being in this gentleman's possession, okay? And
well,
he took that off twice.
Can I say this? One thing we need to focus, one thing our directors in that department need to do is they need to focus on why they're there instead of focusing on trying to find friends like the mayor or someone else to go and have lunch with every day, and focus on why they're there. Focus on what the Civil Rights Department stands for. And so that's the problem. It depends on the leadership of that department. And that's with any department. You know, under good leadership, you'll get something done. And so when I was there, it was under good leadership. And now afterwards, when people started coming in, it was almost about just the title and being buddy buddies. And that's why Michael Jordan is up out of there. It's so we got someone else up in there from another department. I mean, it really depends on the leadership. We can't be like, okay, well, since this person is black, they're going to get the work done. We got to focus on people that's not going in there trying to be buddies with somebody because they got a good paycheck coming in. And that's where they're losing focus. They're working for us. And that's the problem.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your call. Thank you for calling in. If you have any other comments later in the show, we'll be glad to accept those. Thank you, Ms. Dean. Okay?
All right. Yeah, well, interesting observation. I think I remember the Pacific incident. Well, if not that one, then I remember a very high-profile incident at a very large apartment complex just there on Nicollet, around 58th, 59th and Nicollet, right there by the Cubs and right off of the freeway. In which the Minneapolis Police Department and a private security firm, by the way, played a very jaundiced role in, first of all, helping to harass African-American tenants and then getting them evicted and, in some cases, getting them disqualified from their Section 8. A lot of that goes on. Minneapolis Police have played a very significant role in helping to strip people of their Section 8. And one of the things that I'm remembering as I heard Ms. Dean speaking is how many false reports the police have made time and time again. In fact, we have a case right now with a young lady who lives behind the 4th Precinct, by the way. And there was a real bad situation, included with two officers, one of them being a black officer, by the way, in which they made statements in the investigative report that were clearly jaundiced, but were clearly crafted and intended to do maximum harm to this mother of three. And that matter is now in the courts because the woman in question, the mother in question, has attempted to stand up for her rights. But it's some of the statements in the police report that are then given to Minneapolis Public Housing and then to the Department of Housing. And the next thing you know, you get a letter, and they tell you that you've got to come in for a hearing. You're not given a lot of adequate time. A lot of lawyers won't handle those kinds of cases because there's no compensation involved. You go in before some independent examiner, who is normally some lawyer that's at the end of the trail, if you will, and he's been looking for a handout, and he's the presiding officer. He finds against you, and then the next thing you know, you get a letter indicating you've lost your Section 8. So Ms. Dean is quite on point. Very interesting scenario that she laid out.
Yes. Now, we have I've been following some of the chat rooms here in Minneapolis, the e-democracy, and for our national and international listeners, we've had a series of assaults in a South Minneapolis neighborhood park. Powderhorn Park is the name of it, And also, and another point before I toss it over to you, Mr. Edwards, those of you that read the local newspaper here in Minneapolis Star and Tribune or the Star and Tribune or this Trib, whatever you want to call it, if you've noticed, there's no more listings of the number of homicides in Minneapolis. And we gathered somewhere around 50, up around 50, but yet they have stopped publishing that. And so that finds that interesting, but go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
Absolutely correct, Mr. Allen. We find it rather interesting. I know that the National Research Institute has been following this closely from their research headquarters in the Midwest and on the West Coast. They have Minneapolis targeted as one of those cities in which a lot of civil rights matters are being suppressed, including the homicides as a civil rights issue as it pertains to the disproportionate number of people of color who are homicide victims in this city. And our numbers indicate we're a little in excess of 50. We have not seen a published number in the Minneapolis Star Tribune for.
Yeah. Mr. Edwards. Okay. We're having a little bit of technical difficulty in Studio A. He'll get right back with me, but what I want to say about that and continue this conversation on is that the National Research Institute, who we've been both Mr. Edwards and I have been in close contact with, has not seen or any updates in the Star and Tribune are a number of the number of homicides here in Minneapolis, and that we find that to be quite unusual. But Mr. Edwards is getting his headphones cut back on here. He'll be right back with us. And we just look at that and we read this stuff like on eDemocracy for our international and national listeners. eDemocracy is a chat room where people, a lot of the same people, leave comments and suggestions. And it's not much of a
yes, yeah, we're back. We apparently some technical problem here with the studio.
Okay,
we lost you on our audio.
Switch. Yeah, I just told you you're getting your headphones back on, so you pick up right where you left off there, Mr. Edwards.
What we're talking in terms of is that there is a lot of level of violence that's going on that is really not being reported. Let us go to the issue in this. You've already talked about the front page article. This morning's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, where there were three very violent rapes in Powderhorn Park, which is a very large park in the inner city of Minneapolis, and then a couple blocks away, two very young females were taken, kidnapped at gunpoint, and were in fact being raped inside a garage at the time that the police arrived, apparently the police saying that they had followed the footsteps of the individual from the rape and assault inside of Powderhorn, in which a woman who was doing some, show you how large this park is, she was there doing some cross-country skiing, particularly with her youngest daughter and her son. What is troubling is that there have been a significant number of assaults, sexual assaults, as well as homicides. Now, we were initially saying, before we lost some transmission, is that it's been amazing how the numbers have disappeared with respect to homicides. Now, early this morning, we had a female, Jesse Garcia, and the Minneapolis Police Department have refused the request by this program to even confirm the death of the woman this morning at Abbott Northwestern Hospital. She was the victim of a vicious sexual assault a month ago, died from complications. How she is being referred to in the police department's communique is as a DOA, but not yet identified as a homicide victim. In other words, she was dead on arrival at the hospital. What's troubling about that is that we have had a serial killer, at least one serial killer, operating here in the Twin Cities for quite some time. And as we first reported exclusively here at On Point back in the summer, the stepdaughter of Senator Amy Klobuchar, whose body was found in the river, the stepdaughter, was a victim of this serial killer. Chief Tim Dolan and his department have worked overtime not to alert the community, and particularly that community which is most vulnerable, women, that this serial killer has been involved and has been doing some things for the last couple of years. And so it goes all the way back to what you were saying earlier, Mr. Allen. There are some real serious questions about just what the protective mechanism is that is in place. Now, Councilman Gary Schiff, Democrat of the 9th Ward, is quoted in this morning's paper saying he's going to call a meeting for Monday or Tuesday. They didn't have the dates together. To talk in terms of the level of violence. But it's not like this is anything new. I mean, as we said on these programs this past summer, we were in a meeting in that same general vicinity talking about violence, and a person was shot and killed right outside the door when they were talking about Operation Ceasefire. And so the violence has been out of control for a long time, but city officials have decided to suppress as much of it as they possibly can.
Yeah, and then the woman this morning, I did send Sergeant Jesse Garcia of the Minneapolis Police Department an email requesting, first of all, the press release, and then he sent me an email back saying there was no press release, and like you said, we don't want to split hairs. And then I sent him another email requesting, the information in whatever format he sent it out about the DOA this morning at Abbott Northwestern Hospital. He did try to make a telephone call to me, but I was on the other line at the time and did not recognize his number. But still, we are being, you know, the Black Free Press here in Minneapolis or in Twin Cities is pretty much being obstructed when it comes to that information, which lets also the citizens of the Twin Cities are obstructed and denied useful information. We have a caller.
All right.
Okay. Hi, this is Don and Ron on Point. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Terry from the Minneapolis Mirror.
Hey, we have
Terry
is a Gary from the Minneapolis Mirror. Go ahead, Terry. Go ahead. State your
One question, because this is the first I'm hearing about the assault of the woman. Where did that happen?
What has basically taken place, Terry, as it pertains to the woman who died this morning at Northwest Abbott, which happened a month ago, the police are suppressing all information. It's the reason that Mr. Allen and myself made the official request to Sergeant Garcia, who is operating today as the public information officer for the Minneapolis Police Department. I know that the Minneapolis Star Tribune had been given the information and had agreed to suppress the story. That is a doggone good question, Terry. Where did it specifically happen? We specifically only asked two questions. We asked what was the name and the race of the deceased, and Sergeant Garcia is indicating that no such situation took place. I have to tell you that I'm aware the information came directly from his office as a part of an internal communique, which was intercepted. Was intercepted, I can't go into detail.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Terry,
go ahead.
No, actually, you know, you live right across the street from, not in that area, that general vicinity of Powderhorn Park. How is the area? Because, you know, when you go into, like, places like Abbott Northwest, you see these beautiful pictures of people ice skating around the lake, and there's a clubhouse, there's hot chocolate.
Well, the whole lake ice skating thing hasn't occurred in a long time. I mean, they build a separate thing on the side, I think, for, like, hockey players. And there aren't that many people, like when I was growing up. The park used to be filled, you know, with kids, you know, activities. But
okay.
In all honesty, I believe we're always given a false sense of security in this neighborhood. Powderhorn is a beautiful park, don't get me wrong. Beautiful park. But it's kind of an empty park. You know, a lot of people walk their dogs. But we also have a lot of rental properties around here. Don't forget, it was just two blocks away that little Guadalupe Hernandez was shot outside. You know,
yes,
a couple
yes.
weeks ago, 2 on 34th in Chicago.
Yes.
So
yes.
You got that on 34th, and I'm not saying one thing has anything to do with another, but there's so much which I love. We do have diversity in this neighborhood. We can honestly say we have diversity, but you have a lot of different, you know, cultures, people living here, a lot of rental properties. It, my opinion, and I'm always called Miss Negative and willy-nilly, is not really a safe park. It never has been. I never even sent my kids down there for program.
Oh, okay.
I would send them to McRae or what's the one down at Longfellow Park? Most people who've had kids here, unless you're there with a parent, don't send their kids down there alone.
Okay. What's the atmosphere right now, Terry, as you've been back and forth around your home? I mean, what's the atmosphere right now in the Powderhorn area and the park?
Honestly, it's like I said to Don, my area here is like a ghost town. I can guarantee you, if they're not watching the news, most people probably don't even know what occurred down there. I didn't even know about it till KSTP broke the news yesterday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went around on, you know, a neighborhood threat. But, and this is nothing against Lieutenant Lee Edwards, but they had a gathering because so many people had concerns of the shooting of, you know, the little 12-year-old?
Yes, Guadalupe.
Five people from the neighborhood showed up.
Oh, wow. Five. So
the Star Tribune tried to make it appear that 50 or 60 people showed up. Oh, okay.
Oh, absolutely not. No. Five people, and two people were from Uptown.
Okay. They came all the way from Uptown, which is like 3 miles away. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, Lieutenant Lee Edwards, who we haven't heard about for quite some time, used to be the inspector at the 4th Precinct. What is he in what is now the 3rd Precinct? Is he the CERT commander or what? I saw him and saw some pictures of him on TV, but he's not the inspector out there. What is his role?
I think he is a night...
He's like watch commander.
Okay. Right.
Night commander. Oh, okay, I got you. So Dolan sent him out to talk to the colored people. Gotcha.
He couldn't discuss anything about the case, which I understand. Mm-hmm. But I specifically had asked a question. You know, there's a lot of, you know, Latino tagging going on around here. Do we have a gang problem?
Right.
And the response was, yeah, there's tagging, you know, on Lake Street. And I'm like, no, it's going on in our garages and our fences. And,
yes,
and the response was, yes, there's a tagging problem. But my question of, is there a gang problem, was not addressed. And
right.
Again, you know, how do we as residents know what we're up against? But again, I have to say, my area, minus renters from apartment buildings in this area, that the kids are outside playing soccer, homeowners, minus people walking their dogs, it's a ghost town. It's like there's no light. People build their privacy fences and they live in their backyard.
Right.
I don't think people at the end of my block, I can go down there and they're clueless as to what's going on in the neighborhood.
Right. Okay. All right. Appreciate it, Terry.
Okay. Anything else, Terry, you have to want to interject in there?
Oh, I mean, I wish I knew as much as you did. It's pretty quiet.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. We just had someone to say, Terry, tagging problem equals a gang problem. And any way you look at it and switch around and vice versa. So,
right.
Yeah, you'll know. They're good.
And I think I would like to know, you know, I know that they're juveniles, so juveniles are protected. But I do feel that this obviously was random. So I don't know how they can say that we as residents don't have anything to fear. And I guess I would like to know what type of kids that these are that are out here doing this horrendous things.
Absolutely. Of course, as you noted in the article on the front page of this morning's Map Star Tribune, they did point out that these individuals were from a lot of different neighborhoods outside of Powderhorn. They come in from the Phillips neighborhood, Bancroft neighborhood, et cetera, which makes it kind of frightening because you're talking in terms of marauders, if you will, and that has some real dangers to it. Also, I noticed that the Star this time stayed away from the race of the perpetrators, which is kind of interesting for some of us in the African-American community. Hopefully, at the meeting that Councilman Gary Schiff says that he'll be having either Monday or Tuesday, there'll be more information. But, you know, Terry, I don't think so. I think they'll do the same thing that Lieutenant Lee Edwards did. We can't talk about the case.
And I will intervene on what you just said because you hit a real bullet point, Rod.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, when they keep the race of a person quiet, I remember I did an individual poll once, and when I went around to people at farmers markets and asked when they thought of street crimes or gangs, what was the first group of people that came to mind, and everyone except two people said African-American.
Right.
You know, we're given the perception that it's always African-Americans out here committing the problems, and we're not hearing enough about, you know, white, Somali. I mean, it's equally across the board.
Oh, yeah, Hispanic, Latino. Oh, yeah, you're absolutely correct, and we've been watching that very closely for a long time. Yes.
And that is something that a lot of people, when I go to meetings at Powderhorn directly, but when people, like, they tried doing something this summer down at the park, it wasn't about Latinos, it wasn't about Somalis, because remember, they play soccer down in these parks in the summertime. You know, the park is full with, you know, and this is very much a Latino area. They never focused on anything other than African Americans and blacks causing problems in the neighborhood. And
yeah, right.
I personally don't think that's necessarily the truth of the matter.
Right, right. Okay.
We have to agree with you there. Well, hey, Terry, thanks for calling in.
Terry, thank you.
Okay. All righty.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Again, Mr. Allen, we want to point out on this end that the newspaper article in this morning's edition, Star Tribune, indicated that, again, Councilman Gary Schiff, Democrat, 9th Ward, is saying his ward, well, the Powderhorn Park is actually split by the 9th Ward and the 8th Ward, the 8th Ward being Elizabeth Glidden, Democrat, 8th Ward. But Schiff is saying he's going to have some kind of town hall meeting, and he's going to have the authorities there. The only problem is the game that gets played in this city is that when the police show up, they never have any information for you. And that's a part of the strategy. We saw that and were able to analyze it as a part of the federal task force for 5 years. That sat for 5 years, meeting with the police, overseeing them to the extent of monitoring and et cetera. And that is a modus operandi that they like to put forward, to not give you anything and see if they can extract some information and, as they say, intel, because they don't have a clue about what's going on. By the way, in the case of, and Mr. Allen asked this question for our listening audience, in the case of the deceased at Abbott Northwestern Hospital this morning, we asked the question of Sergeant Garcia if anyone was in custody or if they had any suspects, and apparently that's when Sergeant Garcia, Mr. Allen, as I understand it, broke off discussions with you. Is that correct?
Yes. He did not. I tried to return his call, but I did not get anything from him.
Right.
No information from him.
Right. And that becomes very crucial. As we said before, we are at a little over 50, probably 52 homicides here in the city of Minneapolis, up somewhat significantly from 19 all of last year. As we said before, there has not been a homicide figure in any story dealing with crimes, homicides, violence, and assault in the Minneapolis Star Tribune for 2 months.
Surely haven't. Not a peep or a snicker or nothing.
Yeah.
Mr. Edwards, I want to dive back real quick, if we can, to November 20th, our broadcast on November 20th. Well, we had found out earlier that morning, I guess you would say, that a young professional had allegedly jumped to his death.
Uh-huh.
And how the series of reports came out. And the last.
Now, was that the 20th, Mr. Allen, or the 14th?
Oh, let me just look here. Let me just look.
Yeah, I think you're dating yourself.
Yeah.
It was the 14th.
Yes, it was. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, it was the 14th, because that became crucial, because the following Saturday we had discussion about the information that was coming out, and we were breaking the story that really was broken by the caller who just called in, who is also a journalist, that it was now being as a contention by the wife and other witnesses that Jason Yang had been shot. Of course, since that time, by the way, and for the purpose of transparency, people are saying that that was not true, that his collarbone shattered and part of his collarbone came through and punctured his skin in the back area of his shoulder. But again, I cut you off, Mr. Allen. Go right ahead. Your thoughts.
Well, my thoughts on that, like, Chief Dolan released a statement after the Minneapolis Mirror and a couple of other bloggers, put out some information that, you know, we felt that there is a big gap missing in this information. After his wife, they filed that affidavit that said, I myself, this is his wife, Jason Yang's wife speaking, who said, I myself, with my own eyes, viewed a bullet wound in his right shoulder.
Right.
And so, with that said, Chief Dolan went on the defense, I would say, and just decided that anybody saying anything other than what the medical examiner was reporting was a charlatan, and it was hurting the community. But then again, you know, I have to go back and remember, you know, what being a self-serving charlatan involved telling the family of Fong Lee, you got to remember Fong Lee, that his fingerprints were on a weapon that had no trace that Mr. Fong Lee had ever had that weapon.
That's correct, and that meeting took place. We were in the vicinity. We were outside. That meeting took place at City Hall after a very large protest by the Asian community, really, in support of the Hmong community. The chief absolutely made that statement. That came out at trial in May of 2009. I think the first time we had the attorney Mike Patton on, he talked about that. But I was there in both of those situations, both of those meetings, and I was at trial when that testimony came in. And you're absolutely correct. When you talk about charlatans, you need to be careful what it is that you wish for, because the chief clearly in 2006 lied to the family of Fong Lee and said that his fingerprints were on that weapon. And that was very crucial to the kind of sanitation or sanitizing of the so-called investigation, similar to what they did in the case of the young African-American Courtney Williams, shot and killed in 2006. This is a pattern. Let us go back and make sure we clarify the dates for our listening audience.
Okay.
When the following Tuesday, after Mr. Yang allegedly jumped to his death, the family, led by the wife, went to this would have been the 16th of November or thereabouts, went to the medical examiner's office, which is in downtown Minneapolis, right across from the Hubert H. Humphrey Dome, and asked to view the body, which is not unusual, and in many cases you're allowed to do that, particularly for purposes of identification, though the official protocol here in the state of Minnesota is that they take fingerprints and dental records. But it is always great to have a loved one or a relative of what is called the first degree come in and et cetera. Well, the wife and her friends gathered there. Dr. Baker kept them waiting for 90 minutes. 90 minutes. Again,
yes.
Source reference, Minneapolis Star Tribune. They then went and got an attorney, and they then came back and protested. And then finally on that Friday, approximately 6.5 days after the death of Mr. Yang, the attorney of record, Jill Clark, went into the state district court and got a order requiring the medical examiner, Dr. Baker, to make the body available for viewing. Now, initially, and this was interesting, they wanted to take pictures. Mm-hmm. Now, my understanding is that at this hour, that one of the series of photographs that are absent are now photographs of the area in which the wife of Mr. Yang indicated she saw, along with a couple of others who were allowed to come in as witnesses, the so-called area of the bullet wound, that all of a sudden there are no examination, autopsy, / figures, / photographs. And when we say figures, we're talking in terms of everything they're supposed to be measured. You understand I'm talking in terms depth and et cetera, right?
Yes.
Well, my question now to the Hennepin County Medical Examiner is that where are the pictures of that particular area of Mr. Yang's body? Because I'm being told by reliable sources those pictures are no longer in existence. Now, back to what you pointed out about Chief Dolan. Chief Dolan says that there are photographs. Now, back on the 12th and the 13th, back on the 13th, we reported on this program that you had called and sent an email to the Department of Transportation, state of Minnesota, and had asked if there were any photographs. Remember that?
Yes, I did. Yes, yes.
And they never responded. You went back at them on the 18th, 19th of November, the same week that Clark was going into court. And then around the 22nd and 23rd, we are told by Chief Tim Dolan in the Minneapolis Department that there are video of Mr. Yang allegedly falling, jumping, or whatever from the particular area. And yet you made another call to the Department of Transportation and was told by a very high-ranking DOT official that they could not respond and that you'd have to call, and then they sent you through the hoops. Am I correct?
Yeah, the hoops. Go call the communications department, get a request. And by that time, you get pretty fed up with dealing with these bureaucrats. But, Chief Dolan says there's video evidence, but to this date, the police have not released any video footage of that night to the public or to the family. Now, you have three officers who were named in a police report in Jason Yang's death, okay? You have Officer Adam Lewis that has a total of 13 infractions, which were investigated, including one for a reprimand for excessive force.
Right.
Case which he's being currently investigated by the Internal Affairs Unit of the Minneapolis Police Department. Officer Douglas Dubay, D-U-B-A-Y, has 11 noted cases by the CRA and 3 cases which were investigated by Internal Affairs.
Okay.
And then some eyewitnesses say that, contrary to the media reports, the only fight of epic was between bouncers, police, and the patrons as they spilled out of the nightclub.
Who was the third officer, by the way? You said 3 officers. Do you have the name of the third officer?
That was not given rightly, and I had those, but there's 3 officers involved. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, again, just for transparency, because we said 3. Gotcha. Okay, go ahead. Uh-huh.
And so I just think that there's a lot of open gaps in this investigation and exactly what happened, because if there is video footage, if there is MnDOT cameras or the city of Minneapolis cameras, you know, we need to take a look at that. And if you look at that ramp, you know, I think he fell at 70 feet, and then the paper had reported that he fell a little bit further than that.
They said he fell at 2 stories. Of course, you know, the stories, quote unquote, vary in architectural design, if you will. Could be 70, could be 100 feet, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like you, because one of the things that the family was told is that the reason for the puncture that they are now saying the wife and Michelle Gross specifically, because they've really gone after Michelle Gross, who is the head of the Committee Against Police Brutality. They're saying that when he fell on some sharp object that must have been implanted in the ground, and that was what caused the puncture. And then they changed it and said, no, it was his collarbone.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And then in the first listing in the Star and Tribune where they talked about his injuries, none of that collarbone stuff was even listed. You know, his spleen, his kidneys, heart, et cetera, all these body parts that were just ripped apart because of the fall, the impact. They
right.
never mentioned once anything about his shoulder and a bone protruding through his shoulder that would look, you know, give the appearance of a bullet wound.
I never did. And it was reported that the wife, as a part of the affidavit she filed in Hennepin County District Court this past Monday, she provided to the court the documentation that the medical examiner, Dr. Baker, and his staff had given her, in which they said were the injuries that led to the death of Jason Yang. Again, as Mr. Allen just pointed out, there was never any reference to a compound fracture, because obviously it would have to be a compound to have broken the bone in such a way as for the bone to have gone out the back or to have been protruding from the back. But as we said before here on Point, we're asking, where are the pictures that the medical examiner, by protocol and procedure, is required to take of all the wounds as it pertains to the body? I'm made to understand now that there is no such pictures that can be found. I'm quite sure that they'll find some pictures later on.
Yeah.
They have been appropriately sanitized and doctored. But this is a very serious situation in our cities right now. This is another of many Asians who are not mysteriously, that's a poor choice of words, you know, who are being killed at the hands of the police, and then it's always a situation that the police did no wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
John, let's get that number again if anyone has any questions for us, any additional information they want to ask about this, because in the next 8 or 9 minutes we'll be going to the Minnesota Vikings sports scene here in the Twin Cities, which has been a big issue.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, we do have a caller.
All right, let's get him.
Hello, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from? Can you speak up a little louder, please? It seems like the connection is kind of bad there. Yeah, we can barely hear you, caller. I apologize. Can you call from a landline, because it's really low?
They're calling from their cell phone. We can tell here by looking at the equipment in studio. They're calling from the cell phone, and it shows an unregistered number. Give us a call from a landline.
Yeah. Can you do that for us, sir? Okay. Hopefully he'll call back.
Okay.
Sound like a guy. Yeah, because I went to get it. But anyway, we'd like to say that you're listening to On Point, broadcasting live from the beautiful McIntosh Studios in downtown Minneapolis. Our call-in number is 1-877-572-4288. Again, that number is 1-877-572-4288. We welcome your calls, suggestions, comments, concerns, and topics that you'd like to discuss here on Point. Mr. Edwards, I just want to interject something here. We have a bunch of mysterious things going on with these police-involved killings of minority ethnics. We still have David Cornelius Smith, who in September on the sixth floor of the YMCA,
right,
was actually tased to death, and from reports and sources, actually died there, but somehow managed to be on life support at HCMC for 10 days, 8 to 10 days,
yes,
before he expired. And we have, again, no responses from the downtown Minneapolis YMCA, no response from the police department, and just it just went quiet. And we have Quincy Smith, who was tased to death in North Minneapolis and passed away, expired.
December 2008, correct?
Mm-hmm. And then who else do we have there? We have Dominic.
Well, we have a number of individuals, young African-American males, such as Mr. Meeks, as an example, the young man killed in the vehicular homicide in which an individual drove his car into a crowd of young African-Americans, killing two of them. Mr. Meeks died at the scene. He is the individual that we have reported on 4 weeks ago. There's been no challenge that his body organs were harvested without authorization and without the knowledge of his family, and that we are aware of who a specific recipient was of one of those organs. By the way, we've been able to find a particular number has now come out. The number is about 220,000 per organ. So the county and the medical examiner have been making a pretty nice chunk of change on these the harvesting of these body organs from young African Americans and others of color without authorization and approval. Star Tribune, in a discussion with yours truly this morning, tried to raise the question about how could that be done, that you normally have to take organs very quickly. And I was amazed at the stupidity of the reporter, because if the medical examiner gets to you first and you're DOA at the scene, they don't even bother to get you to the hospital, that's when the harvesting or the extracting of the organs from the body takes place. I'm amazed at some of the questions that the white media are now trying to raise about this particular issue. But this has been very profitable for Hennepin County and the medical examiner's office. We think that this summer alone they probably made close to $1 million in the harvesting of organs from young persons of color, male and female, and particularly young African-Americans.
Exactly. And that's something they're kind of keeping on the down low. But as I said in our blog post, we're going to put their business in the street and see what they come back with. It's like going fishing. You know, you have to know what these people are doing. And it shocks me, at the number of people that are just blinded to that this is going on.
Absolutely. You maybe get some movement when you begin to specifically detail with great specificity, person, time, date, and et cetera. But then, that's not our responsibility if there's not going to be a legal action taken to deal with these criminal acts. Then we have to hold our information in abeyance until we find someone that is prepared to do that, or till we're able to help a family be able to initiate the proper legal challenge so that there are penalties and sanctions as it pertains to what's going on. But it's horrendous here right now.
Yeah, yes, it is. And I would just like to let people that are listening here, I'm just kind of peeking around, if there's anybody from the city of Minneapolis Police Department, the mayor's office, the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights that are tuned in and listening, the Star Tribune, we welcome you to call in. If you have some facts or we're on the wrong page or something, give us a call. It's great.
Yeah.
You know, let us know where we need to be at here, you know.
That's right. And as we used to say in the South, get our minds right.
Get
our minds right. Has that caller from the cell phone with the restricted number, has he called us back?
I think he was calling on a Skype or internet phone here, and I don't understand, but it was really low. So hopefully he will call back, and we do invite him, please, to call back. And we just couldn't hear you. It was inaudible, and we just don't want to put that across the airwaves because we want everyone to hear and have an opportunity to know what's going on.
Absolutely. Well, let us move to the sports scene because a lot of discussion around the country. By the way, for the Minnesota Gopher fans trying to watch both, the Gophers are still hanging on, though it looks like Iowa's getting ready to possibly tie or go ahead in the game at TCF Field. But the big news, sports scene, if you will, has been the dismissal this past Monday of our but Brad Childress as head coach of the Minnesota Vikings after just a disastrous game a week ago Sunday, a 31-3 loss to the hated Green Bay Packers. Brad Childress was fired by Viking owner Ziggy Wolf. And Leslie Frazier, who held the title of assistant head coach and defensive coordinator, African-American, becoming the seventh African-American to be a existing head coach in the National Football League, and is the reason we said existing. But Leslie Frazier takes over. The Vikings play in Washington tomorrow against Donovan McNabb and the Washington Skins, and that should be an interesting game. We think that Coach Frazier, who is well liked, very respected. But we mentioned him before, back in the early fall, Mr. Allen, if you remember it here on Point, because we just found it amusing how he has become kind of the poster child for what is called the Rooney Rule. And the Rooney Rule is a rule that was named for the current owner in the family that has owned the Pittsburgh Steelers since day one. Mr. Rooney put in a rule, or got his fellow owners to agree to a rule a couple years ago in which when you go out to find a new coach that you must interview at least one, quote-unquote, minority, if you will. Some teams do it. Some teams have gotten away with not doing it, and et cetera. Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, who has been in the forefront of trying to break the union, that's why we say here on this end that we don't think there will be any professional football in the United States in 2011.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones tried to get out of the Rooney Rule just in the past week. The NFL, feeling the political pressure, told him that he was going to have to honor the Rooney Rule. He would have to interview a minority candidate. Jerry Jones, you know, Arkansas boy, kind of felt that he didn't need to do that, but the NFL has insisted. Anyways, in the case of Leslie Frazier, he becomes the second African-American head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, and following in the footsteps of the legendary Denny Green, who actually led the Vikings to the best record during the regular season they've ever had, 15-1. But Coach Green, who was very successful here, by the way, Coach Green had three black quarterbacks under his tenure, Warren Moon, Randall Cunningham, and, of course, Dante Culpepper.
Yes.
And that's one of the issues, Mr. Allen, that has tore this team apart is the whole thing with Tavares Jackson, who, by the way, is featured in the sports page of this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. But anyways, Leslie Frazier takes over as interim coach for the remaining six games of the Minnesota Vikings as they try to put together what has become a disastrous and very tattered season.
Well, do they have any chances at all? I mean, all the teams would have to basically lose their next six games, right? For them even, and they would have to win for the Vikings to even go to the playoffs, correct?
Well, what basically happens, one of the problems that they have is that one of the games, they're through with Green Bay. Green Bay has swept them, so Green Bay automatically has what is called tiebreaker. The game that they have left against the other team in the NFC North who could force them not to be able to get into the playoffs is the Chicago Bears, who have already beaten them once in Chicago. Chicago will be playing here in a couple Sundays in their second game against the Vikings. Mathematically, to your question, I guess you could say mathematically, if you really were pushing the pencil, that the Vikings could win their remaining six games, finish 9-7. And Green Bay and Chicago would, as you just said, would basically have to lose all of their remaining games, certainly four of their remaining six, for a possible tie. But here's the problem. As we said, in the case of Green Bay already has the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
They played the Vikings twice. They defeated the Vikings. Chicago is on what we call 60-40 ground, 60%. Big part.
No, no, that was just my
Of the feedback. So to your specific question, I think that the Vikings now are just playing for pride and respect.
Yeah.
But I would love to see Leslie Frazier win. I've got him predicted at winning five of the last six. I think the Vikings can win five of their last six and could finish 8-8. If they win the remaining six, they finish at 9-7. So it's interesting.
Okay. All right. All right. Here we go. I'm just I thought that caller had called in a number, blinked a minute, but he is gone. So hopefully he will call back again. Our call-in number here is 1-877-572-4288. If you have a comment, suggestion, topic, go ahead and give us a call. We appreciate it.
Mr. Allen, I understand that I know you have been doing some investigative reporting on the Schubert Theater in downtown Minneapolis, which is another one of those piggy banks for big white developers and construction companies and government officials. Your assessment this week, do we have any persons of color working on the Schubert Theater?
Well, you know, I went down there, Mr. Edwards, as I reported, because I think you're reading my mind, because I was just going to that post that I put up about the Schubert Theater, downtown Minneapolis, right there off 5th and Hennepin. But, you know, on the on November 10th, 16 days prior to November 10th, 2010, I had an opportunity through my regular work downtown to go and observe. Looking out the window from the Lumber Exchange building there, the work site at the Schubert Theater. And for 16 days, and after walking around the area, the parking lot there on the side back there where the balloon is and the other places around there, and just looking into the work site, I saw no people of color, no Hispanic,
okay.
Latinos, no Asian, no African Americans, no Native Americans, no one. And Mr. Edwards, I went as far as to talk to one of the who I thought and who identified himself as one of the site managers.
Yes, I remember you talked about that. Yes.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, when looking at this, you want to have in a city that has the worst, you know, contract compliance in the United States. I think only behind maybe Detroit.
No, we are the worst. We are the worst in the United States of America, yeah. The study confirms it.
So we have the worst, but in a city like this, you would think that they would, you know, pump up the effort for the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, the CPED, areas like that, to get these African-American construction firms on the site. But, you know, I also have to say that my eyes were opened by this site manager who was very friendly. He just didn't want to be on camera. You know, and
yeah.
he didn't want me to use his name. I have his business card sitting right here. And I'm going to honor that for him today and for his future. But what he said to me was something that is happening quite a bit. He goes, Don, he says, I would be glad to hire African-Americans, Latinos, Native Americans, Asians, whoever came down, their construction firms, and also their laborers. People in the neighborhood or in your community, when he says your community, coming out of white man's mouth, it means the black community.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
To come down here and work. He says, but I'm in business. I'm in business, number one, to complete my project and to make a profit, to get done. That's why I'm in business. I says, if these city local yokels don't enforce their ordinance, or come down here and check on me, and all they ask me for is to have a affirmative action report. You know, that's all he basically, yeah, I got an affirmative action plan right here.
Right, right.
He says, there's really no need for me to worry about that. He goes, Don, that's not anything in my mind. I'm not doing anything wrong. He says, if the city needs to have some color down here, well, it's their responsibility to make sure that the people come to me, they give the bids, you know, the low bid wins, and we get them on the job. If they have laborers, people have to bring labor people to me. The city has to, and if they don't enforce it. So he says, then my only responsibility is to complete the project. Okay, and he's absolutely correct.
He's absolutely correct. Yeah, he's absolutely correct. This is a part of the statement made by and our first caller, Ms. Dean, interested enough, made that reference to the former civil rights director, a gentleman by the name of Michael Jordan, who in mid-2008, and with a sense of real cockiness, never was reprimanded by the mayor or the city council, said, look, we can meet our goals of diversity and minority hires, and not. And this man, Michael Jordan, is black. So for those of you in our domestic and international listening audience, he said, if we never hire a black person, we will still meet our diversity goals. And since then, two very damaging reports, as Mr. Allen just pointed out, have come out. Which indicates that this is the most egregious city with its enforcement agencies in the United States of America as it pertains to adhering to the rules and adhering to the ordinances, adhering to the law. We do not provide economic sustenance to African Americans in these cities. We don't provide them with jobs. When we do provide them with jobs, we make sure that they make less. The report reflects that. We repeat it again, page 17 of the recommendations, as well as pages 119 through 127 of the 300-page report, that African Americans, male, female, are guaranteed to make almost 40% less than their white counterparts under any circumstance on these massive big contracts. That have gone into the economic rejuvenation and increasing the economic vitality of Minneapolis, if you will. And the report is out there. By the way, the council will vote to formally accept the report and go on about their business on December 9th and 10th. On December 9th, what is called the Committee of the Whole, in which the entire council sits as a Committee of the Whole, will receive Velma Corvell recommendations, which they already know, and then the following day, the following morning at around 9:30, they will vote to accept the report and to accept whatever recommendations Corvell comes up with, which are already recommendations that will do nothing to correct the problems that were identified by the research group NART, as they are called, out of Austin, Texas, with corporate headquarters in New York City. And we, you know, over the last couple programs, Mr. Allen, as you know, we've called upon people to access the report. The city says it's on its website, if you will, online. You can get it. Only problem is it's sanitized. You really need to go get your hard copy. The recommendations, which technically were a separate document of 20 pages from the 283 page report. The recommendations are startling, to say the least. And so when you run into the situation that you run into with the white construction foreman, one is just not surprised. That's the way things are working here. There is much discussion now going on about the fact that with the new political order here in Minnesota, that there will not be any serious commitment to provide any kind of opportunity for communities of color, particularly the African Americans. Now, as we reported exclusively here 2 weeks ago, Native Americans have threatened to go into federal court to bring about the full implementation of their Memorandum of Understanding, MOU as it's called. As you know, we have been, myself, yourself, a couple others have been talking in terms of a community benefits agreement. The Minneapolis
Yes.
School District has indicated it will not be involved with any community benefits agreement, and it will be business as usual. on the construction of the school districts, $37.5 million. It started out $27.5 million. It's now up to $37.5 million Crystal Palace, as I call it, along the 1,200 block of West Broadway. And that if black folk don't get hired, then that's just too bad.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, too, that you bring that up. I was just thinking about something. We have a caller here, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, let's get them. Let's get our callers in. They're the most important aspect.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. You're on Point with Don Allen and Ron Edwards.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Never heard your show before, and I just kind of was listening to you. I'm from a half an hour south of Minneapolis. You guys don't actually think that race should have anything to do with getting a job, do you?
Can I take a swing at that, Mr. Edwards?
Go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
Okay, that's a double-edged sword, because if you know that the MnDOT has what's called a disadvantaged business enterprise program, and that particular program is to go out actively and seek out minority ethnic and women contractors that own, you know, highway heavy construction firms that do everything from cement to laying down sod and the sign. That is put there to create a fair playing field. Now, there was, in the last 10 years, there was $6 billion flowed into the Minnesota Department of Transportation for Minnesota's highways, roads, and bridges. The minority ethnic contractors and women contractors got less than half of 1% of that money.
That as being because of who they are or because of special favors that are being done in our state and city governments?
Oh, of course. I have to agree with you on the special favors, because I know several white contractors in zip codes 55405, 55401, 55409, 55407. That didn't get a penny of that. But because they live in those areas, okay, I would say, and they are not catered to, and like the black contractors, they fall in the minority ethnic category. I mean, it's just plain and simple. There are fair playing fields set up through MnDOT to USDOT to the city of Minneapolis to CPED, so that, you know, Hubert H. Humphrey set up things so they can make sure that, okay, if you're going to have five white guys working a job, you need to have five black guys working a job. If there's not five black guys or minority ethnics, you know.
So, now, don't you see that as central planning and the same thing that has ruined our entire country?
Well,
I mean,
when you talk about central planning, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about in the context of what central planning means. I know what central planning sometimes leads to central genocide, economically and otherwise. But let me just say this to you, sir, about, you know, your initial question, which my colleague, I think, did a good job of trying to lay out the history to you, though I have a suspicion that you already know the history. What we are talking about is not some bunch of guys standing on a street corner in the inner city made up. This is the mandate of the Congress of the United States. And I think you know that, and I know that, and our listeners know that. The Congress of the United States sat down and set in place legislation to try to deal with some significant imbalances in this great country of ours. And so it's what the Congress of the United States has said upon extensive research and dialogue and then additional research and analysis. And so at some point, we talk about the importance of the law of the land, and so it is the Congress of the United States, with periodic executive orders by the president, whoever that president may be, that says these are some of the things that need to happen in the dispersal of the liquid capital of the citizens of a nation, in other words, your taxes. And so we reserve the right in the African-American community to remind the constitutionalist, if you will, that these provisions have been put in place because we all want to abide by the rule of law. And so, to your specific question, we're talking about and measuring those things which have been mandated by the Congress of the United States.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was talking about central planning. We're letting the federal government tell us what we're going to do in our states. It is wrong. We shouldn't be allowing it. We shouldn't even follow it.
Okay,
I mean,
I need to just interject to something on there, okay?
Yep.
I understand that platform very well, being an independent conservative. I mean, yeah, the government shouldn't say this, 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 and that. Okay, I agree with some of that. But in this particular case, we're looking at several reports coming out of think tanks in D.C. And all over the place, Washington, New York, that say that pre-recession job rates are not going to start getting better until 2014. It's going to take 10 years to get to the levels that it was before this mess started. Now, just give me a second here. I'm setting this up. Okay. CFR 49 Part 26 for the U.S. Department of Transportation, the regulation, basically was written, like Mr. Edwards says, it was adopted into law for the regulation that, hey, you know, you have to have a fair playing field for everyone. But I'm saying we wouldn't be in such bad shape if, A, like you said earlier, caller, if the special favors weren't being called in by, yeah, I know MnDOT is dirty, okay, from rooter to tutor. Okay, dirty. And so the CPED, City of Minneapolis, dirty. Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, more dirty. Okay, so we have this platform here where we have to let people know you're half hour south of the city. I mean, half hour south of the city, you're going to see no one looking like me working on the street down there. But when I live here in the city, I should be able to drive down the street and maybe see one, two, three, or four. But none is unacceptable in this city, a half hour away from where you are, sir.
Well, I've worked around the cities basically my entire life. Mm-hmm. And it's not like there is none. But, I mean, do you think that they're not getting hired because of their skill level? Or is it
No. They're not getting hired because of the color of their skin and because of an unfortunate tradition that has become very acceptable once again on the American scene. I mean, look, we have to be very, very candid with each other, sir. It's
yeah.
because
yeah,
of the color of their skin.
Know.
It's because of accepted tradition. Well, let's try to do it one at a time because there's no need of us trying to talk over each other.
Yeah.
But I mean, repeat to you again, I'd like to hear your counter argument about what we said earlier, that we're talking about those things mandated by the Congress of the United States. Now, I know that the Tea Party and others have taken a position similar to which you just enunciated about federal interference. But let me give you an example of something that I found represented a little bit of hypocrisy. This summer, starting back in April, we had a serious environmental disaster called BP and a significant oil leak. Now, Louisiana, which became central to the so-called economic disaster, has been identified and showed it in the last election and showed it in the election in 2008, is a red state, okay? It's called a red state, which to me is ridiculous, red and blue. I didn't see a lot of folk down there in Louisiana who had no problem talking in terms of federal interference, begging, demanding, criticizing President Barack Obama for not getting more federal resources into the state of Louisiana. Now, my question to you, sir, is where should we draw the line about what's acceptable government federal interference and not acceptable federal government interference? Can you give me a couple examples?
Yes, I can.
Go ahead.
The only acceptable government interference has to do with interstate trade. That is the only thing they're supposed to get involved in. Our federal constitution was not written in a manner in which the federal government can take from, let's say, Minnesota to give to Louisiana. That is not how it was ever set up, and that is part of the corruption that has got us into this problem.
Mm.
The BP oil spill, yeah, it happened, but we got more problems because of the government interference.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the oil's from the earth. It happens. There are microorganisms that eat it, that thrive off it. But when the government stepped in and said, use these chemicals, that is what people are getting sick from. So, I mean, just
but
right
you don't
there.
Think the micro, you don't think the microorganisms read the Constitution, do you? I mean, really.
Oh, well, no. But
yeah,
I mean,
right.
Just,
okay. I just wanted to get a – let me ask you a question because you missed a part and we're talking a little bit. And, Mr. Allen, we have about 12 minutes left.
Right? Well,
I think this is a fascinating conversation that needs to be more discussed in America. You forget, though, that the Constitution also calls for the federal government to provide national defense and national security. Now, are you saying to me that, let's use two states, Alaska and Hawaii, which are technically separated from, quote-unquote, the United States of America?
The mainland. Yeah.
The mainland, as they like to say, particularly Alaska. Are you saying that Alaska should have taken on during the Cold War the total responsibility of providing a national defense and security for the state of Alaska and the citizens of Alaska, and that the federal government should have had no involvement?
Absolutely not, because that falls underneath the protection of the United States.
Oh, okay.
That is where when they take tax, when we pay a federal tax, what that goes to pay for is to pay for the national defense, something that affects everybody equally. But when we start handing out money to individuals for little projects or certain states, that goes against everything.
Let me ask you this question then. In a situation in which a state determines that it will make law that is not consistent with, let's say, the law in another state, and I'll give you the specific example. We're in the state of Alabama, and it's 1889 as an example, and the state of Alabama passes legislation that says that I, as an African American, referred to as a Negro in those days, cannot ride on a streetcar, that I cannot go to a movie theater and sit with whites. Now, is that the kind of states' rights that is acceptable as a part of a moral and a constitutional agenda?
No, because the reason that that doesn't fly is that we actually have an amendment to
our... It did for a long time.
Yes, it did, and that's why we also fixed it by doing an amendment to the Constitution and not by using legislation or presidential authority. We actually did it in the right way. Or actually, no, we didn't. We have the Civil Rights Act of 1964, I believe it is, which I believe should be repealed. I don't think it's a bad. I just think it was done in the wrong manner. It should be done.
Right? How would you suggest that? And of course, I know you'll probably indicate what Ron Paul, the new senator from Kentucky, indicate. How do you think that it should be righted? I mean, first of all, let's repeal the Civil Rights Act.
What I would do is I would repeal the legislation and I would do an amendment to our Constitution.
Is that right? Tell me, what's your knowledge of how you do a constitutional Congress? Constitutional Convention, as it's called. Do you know what has to happen in order for – how many states have to ratify?
Yes, I do, and I believe that that would be the worst thing our country could ever do.
So how will we do it? How will we accomplish it? How will we do this Constitutional Convention and change the Constitution in a number of areas?
No. We do not need to have a Constitutional Convention to change the Constitution. All we have to do is author an amendment and go through the amendment process and get our government, which right now I guarantee you, if our senators were to propose this bill, that we're going to make it so that you cannot, you know, basically take the exact wording of the Civil Rights Act and put that into an amendment to the Constitution, it would pass flying colors. Nobody
would
vote against
it. Now, let me ask you a question, and Mr. Allen, I know you want to get in. Let me ask you a question about this amendment to whatever, the Constitution or wherever else as it pertains to civil rights. Should this kind of be like a don't ask, don't tell? And what is it that I should – let me ask you this question, sir. What is it that during the course of that process, what is it that I should tell America's black sons and daughters who are serving in military combat what this really means? Should they still have the same passion to fight and defend this great nation?
Yes, they should. See, nothing
they
would
should?
Change. What I'm arguing is that the way that they did it was not the right way. If they would have done it the –
Okay, you mean the guys that got together at Constitution Hall in Philadelphia didn't do it the right way?
No, the guys
in
1964.
1964 and 65, they didn't do it the right way.
Yes, they didn't.
Okay.
They didn't do it the correct way. They passed it as legislation and not as an amendment to our Constitution, which would cover all the states.
See,
it's all the balance of power and how we have it set up. You have to do it the right way. Otherwise, we get what we have now.
So what is that?
Okay.
Well, we have a federal government that's out of control that thinks that they can tell each state what they can do. The federal government is not supposed to tell people what to do or states. The Constitution can tell states what to do.
I see.
It's plain and simple as that. And everything that's not written in that Constitution goes back to each state. And if we have a problem with certain states passing laws, like, for instance, saying that you can't, you know, drive your car down the street because you are black, well, then that needs to be an amendment.
But I understand what you're saying, sir, and we really need you to call back next week because this is a beautiful conversation. The only problem was is that when the Founding Fathers got together in Philadelphia, and of course, as you know, they were all a bunch of white guys, they had already said that I was, quote-unquote, and my kind were, quote-unquote, not citizens. And so we couldn't even get our foot in the door. In fact, we couldn't even get in to debate the issue.
Well, I have to correct you on that, because the majority of the people in the northern states wanted it to be like that, but they knew they would never create the union if they did not allow that to happen.
So what are you correcting?
Hold on a second.
Uh-huh.
They did the same kind of thing Obama basically just did. What they wanted
President
to do is
Obama?
They wanted to they wanted to implement a plan and get the ball rolling so it can be fixed later on down the road.
Yeah, but I'm talking in terms of the mindset and the mood in Constitutional Hall when Ben Franklin and the rest of the boys were putting together the Constitution and Bill of Rights. They had already made a decision that those that were called Negroes, be they free or slave, had no rights. And so I'm trying to figure out, do you think that's changed in America now?
Oh, completely.
You think people are more tolerable of each other?
Well, yeah, I don't see a lot of racism. What I see is a lot
you know?
Of it's bait. Well, no, because
yeah,
what I see is basically class warfare.
Yeah,
right.
I'll tell you what.
I'm going to let my associate. We'd like for you to call back. You know what we're going to do? We want you to spend some time with us up here in the cities, and we'd like to spend some time with you down half hour south of Minneapolis, and let's see if we can find any racism.
Oh, hey, I mean,
sir,
you're
it's been a pleasure.
Be able to
we hope
fight.
You continue to call in. Don, go ahead.
I will, buddy. Thanks.
All right, buddy.
I just like to say on this, we're right at 4 minutes here. I'd like to thank the caller for calling in, and you'll have to hang up if you don't want to, but I just want to get back to my original his original question. I think there are significant disparities, as proven by reports done by white organizations that say, yes, these people are not hired, they're not being educated, they're not graduating from high school, and there's no economic stimuli for them because of their race and color. And so with that said, we do have a serious problem of racism here in this country still to this day.
Absolutely. And irrespective of what our good friends in the Tea Party say, and by the way, I'd like to get some feedback. You know, Mr. Allen, I'd like to give some thought to possibly joining the Tea Party.
What's that?
I'd like to give some thought to possibly joining the Tea Party particularly a person, Mr. Allen is a little bit more conservative than Mr. Edwards.
Yeah.
But both of us have some very liberal and conservative views. And one of the things that has been a mystery to me is how we can approach the Tea Party here in Minnesota, because I'd like to be involved.
Well, Mr. Edwards, you know, on April 15th of this year, I spoke at the Tea Party rally in front of the state capitol.
Yes, you did. Yes, that's why I brought this up. Yes.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's very interesting because you want – I mean, that's a whole – well, I wish you had another half hour, 40 minutes, because that's a very interesting topic. And maybe next week the caller can call back at the top of the hour. We can really dive into this, because there are some very significant changes or changes that need to happen in the Tea Party and the Republican Party and the conservative group walking around here in Minnesota that, you know, it caused a state auditor, a candidate for state auditor to lose, you know, the election because she felt that it wasn't necessary to cater to the African-American, Hispanic, and Native American population.
Absolutely.
You know, there's some really significant things going on there that we want to get right and just state our opinions and find out, you know, the caller's position and others that like to call in and join us. So, yeah,
we enjoy that here at Talk Radio, Blog Radio, as we like to call it. I think this is the kind of discussions that we need to see taking place. Mr. Allen, I know we're down to a minute and a half. Anything that you have? Because this has been a most informative program.
Yeah, we have about 90 seconds left in the show. I would just like to, you know, right now, thank everybody who listened and our callers who participated, and we appreciate that. And, Mr. Edwards, I'd like to let everybody know, too, we are now part of the collaboration of the Minnesota Progressive Talkers Network.
Okay.
And so if you guys like to check out their website, I'm going there actually right now. It's www.mnpn.org. And that, again, is www.mnptn.org. And each week that we have a show, well, we have a show every week, we're going to go ahead and post up what our topic is, and we'll be glad, you know, you guys check that out. Give a call in. And I think that this political thing is something that we should address next week, and we'll get some promo going for it and some details out there for everybody. But again, with 37 seconds left, thanks for calling in to On Point with myself, Don Allen, and Mr. Edwards. And if you live in Minneapolis and you're not half hour away from the city, and that was a joke, tune in to Minneapolis Television Network tomorrow for Black Focus, which is Mr. Ron Edwards' television show on Channel 17 in Minneapolis proper, the Minneapolis Television Network. He has an article that comes out in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder every week. And continue to ring the Independent Business News Network, IBNN.org. Thank you for listening to On Point.
And thank you.
It's 5:30.